listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Although Valentine's Day is billed as a fun and festive way to celebrate love and romance, it can sometimes be a time of dread, anxiety, and awkwardness. And this confusion seems to only have been exacerbated over the years as more and more single people are turning to dating apps to guide their romantic lives. Philip Galanis, the New York Times Social Cues columnist, one of our favorite guests on our show, returns now for a post-Valentine's Day check-in. And, of course, when he visits us, we invite you to join the conversation. Did your Valentine's Day leave you with lingering questions or doubts? Are you confused about dating in the modern world? You can give us a call at 212-433-9692. Write to us on our show page at wnyc.org/Lopate or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And Philip, it's always a pleasure to have you on our show.
Very nice to be here, Leonard. Thank you.
Do you receive more letters about romance and heartbreak in February?
Yes. Starting around the holidays, really. I think Valentine's Day is just really a culmination of the difficulty of being alone at the holidays, and people make New Year's resolutions about putting themselves out there in January, and often on the dating apps and in dating, and if you meet people at the coffee shop, there are often misunderstandings that people have about what their intentions are, and it can lead to lots of discomfort. Not as much discomfort as I, however, had on Valentine's Day when I had my first colonoscopy. On Valentine's Day. So I want all the readers, your listeners to know that no matter how bad their Valentine's Day was, mine was definitely worse.
I'm sure that your brain was slightly dulled as a result
of
the anesthesia.
There was no pain. It was the agony of with everything, it's the agony of preparation.
We've been talking about singles, but do you think there's also a large burden placed on couples at that, especially on Valentine's Day?
Well, we're seeped from, in Jane Eyre, Pride and Prejudice, the movie that I choose on the airplane is always the romantic comedy. We're seeped in the transformative power of the romantic relationship. And when all those, novels and movies end with the marriage or the consummation, the real life actually just begins, because it's all about, it's all about the compromise of, do we get a dog or not? Do we try to move to my neighborhood or your neighborhood? And all the difficulties begin then.
And then on Valentine's Day, there are all of those expectations.
Absolutely.
We might call unfair.
The florist on my corner, if you could have seen it, the place at 7 o'clock, when all men, 100% men inside the florist shop, and it looked like there had been some kind of explosion that had gone off with red roses flying everywhere, and lots of people feeling underappreciated. Valentine's Day is a very convenient hanger for how we are not loved exactly the way we would want to be loved.
And last year, I remember we had a conversation on the show in which somebody called in and complained that her boyfriend or husband or whatever had bought the flowers at a bodega and not at a florist.
I do remember. I actually do remember that. The great bodega caper. It became a trending little thing for a moment on Twitter.
And you have to wonder just how much money and how much the gift was spent on the gift or the dinner or whatever plays a role in how we consider ourselves valued.
Right. Compromise is really under fire now that we live in an Instagram world, in a dating app world, where we can cycle through people and their lives faster. And we see that we often see that people are racing on dating apps, for instance, to find the disqualifying thing about a person. What makes me say next. I'm through with him or her. And if it's a bodega flower, or if it's, you know, yeah, he's great, but he doesn't like to bike. And so I want a boyfriend who's really lovely like him, but also wants to bike. And
or it could be politics. It could be whether
it's everything.
A person likes to socialize a lot.
It sped up the natural or the cycle of dating that I grew up with, which was a kind of slower investigation of the other person. And it's now a race to find the thing that makes you go, there are a million other fish in the sea. I better get to one of these other ones. And you go next. So it's very interesting. And the people who write to me are often they're often the victims of that, because they deeply want to be with someone, and yet they are being deeply unrealistic about what it means to, in fact, be with another person. It means being with everything about them, the qualities that make them wonderful and the qualities that make them not so wonderful. And by the way, we all have those not so wonderful qualities. It's not
speak for
like,
yourself.
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, do you see a generational gap here?
Yes.
And when you get mail, can you almost spot whether the question is from somebody who is of a certain age?
Right, I can. And the age is definitely one of the things that is most interesting to me is the I don't know what we call the generation after the millennial generation, the girls who have grown up and the boys who have grown up squarely in hookup culture. And it's the idea of, you know, the girl empowerment and female empowerment and having sex too, except there's a kind of, they're also seeing a lot of the media that we were talking about earlier that I grew up with and you grew up with, Pride and Prejudice and, you know, Jane Eyre. So there's a kind of a vestigial hankering for romance. So they know they're signing up for a hookup app. They're hooking up, and yet they're also vaguely unsatisfied by it. And boys are often slower to get to that point, but I get many, many letters from young men who, straight and gay, who are, you know, dissatisfied with their inability to find something more lasting than, you know, a hookup and then a thank you very much and then being on your way.
Although we are seeing all sorts of different ways that people are dealing with this. I just read recently that there are some people who have sex before they really have the first date. This is a new thing, or maybe it's always been there, but I never happened to me. Then there are people who say that they really don't want to have sex at all. That's not really of their plan.
Right. It is a rich tapestry.
Humanity. They're friends with benefits. There are all sorts of other solutions. We have we've invited our listeners to call in. Our number here is 212-433-9692. Philip Galanis of the New York Times, among other things, is my guest. And Bethany from Bergen County, New Jersey, you're on the air.
Hi.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Well, I was just calling in because I'm 27, and my boyfriend and I actually met on Tinder, and we've been together now for close to a year and a half.
Right on, Bethany.
And what were your expectations when you went to Tinder in the first place?
I wasn't really expecting very much. It's been touted as a hookup app. But I was having conversations with plenty of different guys, and, you know, I would go out on dates, and this one just stuck, and we ended up getting along really well, and we've been together a while.
Do you think the fact that you kept your expectations low had an effect on your ultimate success? Because I actually think that might be a big factor, that you weren't out there looking for Prince Charming. You were willing to meet a lot of guys and see if any of them struck your fancy.
Right. I definitely agree with that. It's funny because I talked to some of my girlfriends, and they don't want to do Tinder because they're nervous about what's going to be on there. And, you know, they're looking for something really serious. And that's fine because I was too. But I also, I think I was realistic about it in that, like, where am I going to meet people now? I'm a teacher. You know, I work with mostly women. I'm an elementary school teacher. So.
Well, were there, are there certain things that immediately turned you off, for example, on that first date? Thing, clues that indicated to you that this person was not going to go out with you again?
Definitely if he was talking about only himself, you know, like typical stuff that you kind of look for on a first date, like, is this person asking me questions or is he just talking about himself the whole time? Or
what about looking at his phone?
Oh, definitely looking at his phone too.
Right. I think that you're a great example of using what all the tools that are out there in the world to meet people and find people to be have all kinds of different relationships with, because even if you hadn't met a guy to go out on dates with and become serious with after a year and a half or so, you might have met a really nice guy who could have, you know, gone to MoMA with you if you'd found out you both loved sculpture, or, you know, you both loved going to, sci-fi movies. You would have found somebody, a partner in crime. I think it's really great. I get a lot of mail from women who are about 27 or so, and they think that one of the things that they have a kind of self-blame, which I hate to see, because they go on Tinder, and you're right, it has a rap for a hookup site because it mostly is a hookup site. And they're on Tinder. They know not to expect the guy to become a serious boyfriend. And then they can't help blaming themselves for feeling a little bit melancholy that he's not. So they don't really have anyone to blame but themselves, and that's a terrible feeling because it's not. There's no reason to blame yourself for having a really human impulse like wanting to be close with someone or intimate with someone. It's just that there are. It feels like no matter what site you go on, there are people. There are ways that people have found to turn it into a hookup site.
Thank you so much for calling us, Bethany. Giovanni from the West Village, you're on the air.
Hey, good afternoon. Thanks, gentlemen, for this discussion. I'm gauging that it's a discussion about expectations of a mate and the character of the man or the woman. I turned on my radio when you were talking about Valentine's Day. So,
well, that just brings these expectations to the forefront, but it isn't the only time that we deal with these feelings.
It's funny, and it's where the character really shines and the core of your partner shows up. That's what I think, if people are looking for more, it's what I'm happily was looking for and found. I spent my Valentine's Day with the flu, and my guy came over and got me medicine and got me soup, stayed for 60 minutes, and cleared out. It was the most romantic gesture because he knew I needed to heal. So it's funny, as far as expectations and what you want from someone, the actual day-to-day crazy plans are wonderful, but somewhere in our gut, when we grow up, we realize we want the caregiver and we want to give permission to ourselves to be taken care of a little bit. So that's where I am right now.
That's a great story. I mean, it's reminding me that what I got for Valentine's Day was lemon sorbet, because that's what you're the only thing that you're on my to you can eat before your colonoscopy test that I actually wanted. So mine brought me like a really great pint of lemon sorbet, and it's kindness and gestures of caretaking that I think we all want. And it's funny that all the that the way we should have funneled all this desire is into red roses and chocolate, as if that those were the be all end all. But I'm with you, Giovanni. It's the any kind of gestures that says I'm here for you that is the one that is the most welcome.
Now, would strawberry sorbet have been okay too?
No, because it's red. Leonard, are you not reading the colonoscopy rule book?
No,
you should. Red is out. Any food that is red is out.
We're going to take a little break, and we'll come back with more of your calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at wnyc.org/Lopate or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And you can also write to you can do all sorts of things to reach us, but we are fascinated by the stories that you have to tell, and so far it's been pretty good. Philip Galanis is my guest. He is the New York Times Social Cues columnist. You can read him every Sunday in the New York Times. And then there's those extra columns every fourth week,
yeah.
And those are the ones where you put two people together who seem to have something in common but not a lot in common, right. And then you have them compare notes.
Exactly. And we got a great one from Lena Dunham last week. She had some great notes on dating that we can share later in the show.
But we will do all of that after this. We're back with Philip Galanis, who writes the New York Times Social Cues column every week in the Sunday Times. What is it? I forgot. It's called the Living Section? Or
the Style Section.
Style Section.
Sunday
it used
styles.
To be called Living Section. And we are inviting your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. Julie from Bethel, Connecticut, you're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. My husband and I are both conscientious objectors to Valentine's Day, and we are both happy to be freed from the tyranny of it. My husband and I were both in our second marriages, and our first marriages were very Valentine's Day laden and fraught, and my husband had to make his ex-wife a homemade Valentine's Day gift every single year, and we think it's really ironic that now he's with the person he loves and he never has to be burdened with that task. So we're happy to be freed from the tyranny.
Now, does it matter whether you actually celebrate Valentine's Day on Valentine's Day or another day? It seems to me that because of the commercial aspects of Valentine's Day, if you decide to go out to eat, The prices are always jacked up.
Yeah.
Often it's not necessarily the menu you would have picked.
Right. In my favorite restaurant where we went to dinner that night.
That night after the colonoscopy?
Yes. I was starved. Does the word starving mean anything to you, Leonard?
And you could have eaten something that was
there
red.
There were pink and red balloons tied on every chair. So I couldn't even see my Valentine's date because of all the balloons in the way. But your call is so interesting because the idea of the absence of something being the best gift to give each other is really interesting. The funniest letter that I had this year about Valentine's Day was from a young man who had negotiated with his girlfriend that for 1 week they would not talk about any political headline. That was the one thing he wanted more than anything, was just to have a hibernating week where once he got back to his home that they shared, they wouldn't talk about politics. And it was a really, really hard gift for the girlfriend to give him. But she did give it to him. And it was something about your freedom from the tyranny of Valentine's Day gifts reminded me of freedom from the tyranny of the fact that we know what is happening with the president and his administration every second of every day, and it can feel really overwhelming.
And in this case, Julie, a negative becomes a positive?
Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And we can just sit back and laugh at all the people who are frantically struggling to come up with a last-minute gift, bodega roses or otherwise.
Yes. And you and he could make a nice pot roast. Nothing,
exactly.
nothing special.
Or not.
Exactly.
Thank you for calling us.
Of course. Thank you.
Allison from Manhattan, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. Love the show, guys. And the colonoscopy stuff is hysterical. As a 50-something, I totally get it. So, first of all, I agree with the last caller. Not interested at all in celebrating Valentine's Day, but I don't have a Valentine's anyway. So what I was going to ask Philip is 50-something, early 50s, and just not into all of these, you know, dating sites. I mean, I tried, and, you know, it's just not my thing. So where does one meet someone if one does not go out there?
You don't have friends? I'm sorry, you don't have friends who know people who might be good for you?
Not really, and I do have lots of friends, and just no. No, people don't meet people through people.
I've got an idea.
Yes.
And I have a woman friend and a man friend who have both had incredible success with this in the last 12 months. So I think it's a good recommendation.
I'm ready.
Okay.
Make you it good.
is there an activity that you can see yourself really wanting to like? Playing bridge, learning to play tennis, going and joining a hiking group, and where you will be thrown in with strangers and you're doing something that you want to do anyway.
Right.
And so it's not like you're going, oh, God, I've got to get into a bus to go 2 hours to hike. See, for me, getting into a bus to go 2 hours to hike would be the best thing I could think of to do. I'd be in the fresh air, outdoors, and with the bonus of there might be somebody there, a woman, a man, to become a friend, a boyfriend, a something. If you can think of some, especially when you get to be middle-aged, like us, you get to, you have, one of the luxuries is you might have a few extra shekels to go and investigate an activity that you've always wanted to investigate. And
all right, well, there's the problem, but that we won't get into it. I love your idea. It's wonderful, but the shekels, you know, are not so much there. I'm extremely lower middle class. Just lost my job, actually. But I'm sure, you know, if I put my mind to it, there must be some kind of, you know, there are groups out there.
Going to God's Love We Deliver and making food for people?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay.
Thank you for calling us. You're listening to Leonard Lopate Show on WNYC, WNYC.org. My guest is Philip Galanis, who visits us on a regular basis to talk about the trials and tribulations we all face in our everyday lives. Today, Valentine's Day has inspired us to think about relationships on another level. And we are taking your calls at 212-433-9692. You can write to us on our show page at WNYC.org or on Facebook or Twitter, where our handle is at Leonard Lopate. And Marie, is it, from Brooklyn?
Maury, actually.
Maury. Hi, Maury.
Yes. Hi, Leonard. Hi, Philip. I'm very glad that you gave me a segue to Allison, the previous caller, because I hope she's still listening. What I told the screener was I just really hope to encourage folks to not give up. She and I are the same age. I'm 54 years old now, and I got divorced about 6 years ago. Maybe 7-8 months after that, I started dating via OkCupid, which is an online free online website, and I went through many first dates, and some of them, of course, did lead to, you know, little mini relationships that lasted anywhere from, you know, a few weeks to a couple of months. But it was very discouraging because there were many times that I liked somebody a lot and she wasn't into me, or perhaps the opposite was true as well. But I persevered, and it's not always fun, and it is a little bit humiliating, and it could be demoralizing. But it was just like one of those, well, let's just, you know, get back on the horse and just meet for coffee and what the heck. And finally, I did keep track, and it was a number 70. I met someone who I do consider the love of my life.
Wait, can you just hold on for one second?
I'm sorry?
Amari, can you just hold on for one second? Because I have to
of
make
course.
An important announcement. Right now on WMIC.org, there's a special live stream of President Trump's conference to announce his second nominee for Labor Secretary. You can tune in to that at WNYC.org. Okay, continue, and Philip, you can join in.
That 70, meeting 70 people is a kind of dedication that I really want to take my hat off to, and I also want to, I mean, was it over several, 2 or 3 years?
It was over a couple of years.
You must have met some people along the way who you saw more than once.
Oh, yeah,
for sure, Leonard. No, there were some that lasted maybe a few weeks, and there were some that lasted, 2-3 months, for sure. That did happen. But those also wound up to be, those were some disappointments, and there were some serious heartbreaks there, too. Even there was someone, after just 48 hours, and, it seemed to be fantastic, and it exploded, and it was very, very disappointing. Philip, I do your advice to the previous caller too. I think that's lovely advice and it's wonderful advice. And probably if I had not met my partner, who is moving in with me a week from Monday, I probably would have pursued something
that's
that you suggested.
Terrific. Congratulations. One of the things that I hear, that I read a lot in letters to social cues is that, and it's immediately obvious, is that if you put an attractive stranger just in the corner of the room, whether it's a man or a woman, depending on what you're interested in or looking for, I don't know if it's just a human impulse or if it's a romantic impulse to project all kinds of qualities onto him and to her. And that's one of the biggest challenges of dating apps, where you see a picture of someone and for whatever reason, you can imagine what their career is and what their interests are and how lovely and thoughtful they might be and great at sex and everything. And so you've created a 100% fantasy life for somebody. And then when you meet that person, she or he is going to inevitably be different and probably disappointing, because you've created the optimal version of him and or her. And so it's so great if you can just keep the expectations really for these coffee dates really low, schedule them on days when you've actually got something really that you're looking forward to do later, like dinner with a real friend who you actually already know, or on your way to a yoga class or something like that, where this little meeting is just a little amuse-bouche in your day, not the whole meal.
On the other hand, when you're on one of those dating apps and there is this person who shares your love of skiing or tennis or hiking, who loves to travel to the same cities in Europe or in Asia that you love to travel to, that doesn't mean that it's going to go anywhere. And then there are these other odd little things. Like, some people believe that you don't, if you're enthusiastic about the other person, you don't show it right away. You don't make that instant call. Or if you make that call right away, or the other person makes that call, then perhaps that's a turnoff.
Or there's a shifting power dynamic. Yeah, we have all kinds of fantasies about the way romance is supposed to play out, and a shared love of Joni Mitchell is supposed to make things go right, and all that sort of thing. But it is really this internet component has given us something. At the same time, it has also taken away something very powerful from us too.
Larry has written to our show page, "As a strong Trump supporter, I have been turned down by 95% of single women in New York City." Is it a good idea to wind up with somebody whose politics are very different from yours?
We've been reading a lot lately, mostly on editorial pages, about how much some of us can live inside of bubbles, and we don't even like to have much to do with people who disagree with us in any way from the bubble that we that we like to live in. There are, depending on what parts of the president's agenda Trump, Larry agrees with or disagrees with, I can understand why people would really be drawn to him or not drawn to him particularly. So it's a kind of a weird thing. If you're really advertising yourself to strangers, I don't know why you would take such a a dramatic and polarizing figure and let him be your stand-in. Well, I don't know why you'd lead.
But there were conservative women in New York City.
Sure, but why would you lead with Trump? I mean, why wouldn't you lead with something about you? I mean, I bet Larry's got lots of qualities that are more interesting to a potential mate than his support of the president.
We're going to take another call. Greg from Manhattan, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. Well, thanks for having me on. Long-time listener, first-time caller. I actually wanted to. There's a lot of stuff in here that resonates with me personally. First of all, the first caller, Bethany. My girlfriend is also named Bethany, and I also met her on Tinder. Although she lives not in New York or not in the area. And one thing I found interesting about meeting my girlfriend on Tinder as opposed to a more traditional dating site like OkCupid or even more traditional like Match.com or eHarmony is that I didn't really know anything about her until I met up with her for what to me was going to be a hookup, you know, in the sense that we've been talking right. about so far. And there's all this stuff about reasons to reject people, knowing too much, knowing that, you know, someone's political leanings before meeting them. And I'm wondering if my experience in seeing Tinder, this hookup app, as actually being more of a productive dating app than all the dating apps out there, is that typical or is that unique to my experience? And I was just wondering what your guys' thoughts were on that.
Well, especially if you're looking for someone named Bethany.
I actually think that it's what you've put your finger on something really, really important. There is a wonderful thing that happens, or there's a wonderful optimistic thing that happens when you shake your hand, when you put your hand out to shake your hands with someone and you know nothing about them. You're just meeting somebody who is brand new. You don't have a lot of expectations. I have many friends who will forward me text messages and want to do like Talmudic interpretation of like, you up? It's like, no, that just means, are you awake? It doesn't, there's no great further meaning about what your relationship is going to be or not in that. So I think you've underlined a really great point. It's kind of wonderful it is kind of old timey, like walking down Main Street in Brattleboro, Vermont, and seeing a boy or a girl that you'd never seen before and being interested. And you know nothing about them other than that.
We have run out of time, but we did get a call from the executive director of Volunteer New York, who says that a number of marriages have come out of people coming and working at that organization.
Terrific.
Philip Galanis will be back with us sometime in the near future. Philip, it's always a pleasure to have you. Meanwhile, I'll be reading you in the New York Times every Sunday, the Social Cues column, every once a month with the
Table for three. Thank you, Leonard, very much.
Do I know who's coming up next?
You don't know who's coming up next.
And you're not going to tell me.
No, I may not.